You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Why you're supposed to do these things ahead of time. I did not do that. Okay, well, hey, good morning. We are in the second month of the second, I guess the first sequel to our Wise Up series that we did a number of years ago. Oh, the lights are on too. Okay, good. It's a series that we've been, as you just saw there, we're going through the book of Proverbs, looking at different Proverbs. And as we've talked about, and this is going to come back and it's going to really matter this morning, Proverbs are not what we call prescriptive, meaning that everything in a proverb is if then, or do this and this will happen, but they are descriptive. More Solomon, who wrote many of the Proverbs, and some of the others that were written as a observation about life. Here's some things that I've learned. Here's some things that I've seen. And so that's going to matter in a moment. But let me turn off this TV right now. Because as Justin mentioned, we're giving our Ignition teachers a break. So that means all of the Ignition age kids, kindergarten, or at least who have completed kindergarten through fifth grade. Some of you guys are moving up here in the next couple weeks to start school. But that means you're in this room. So if you are in kindergarten through fifth grade and you would be willing, and even if you're not willing, why not? Come on up here because I need your help with a little project. So if you guys can come up here, don't worry, not all of you are going to have to speak. One of you will, but if you'd like to come up on stage, you totally can. You absolutely can. You certainly can. There you go. All right, okay. So here's what we're going to do this time. And I turned the TV off because the answers are on the TV, and there's no cheating here. Okay, so what I need to do, first of all, is I need you guys to decide. I need one of you to be a spokesperson, and one of you to be the writer. So someone's going to have to talk to me, and one of you. So you guys talk to each other real quick, come up with a plan. One of you is going to write things down. One of you is going to give me the answers. You're all going to work as a team. You're on one team here. Even if you're wearing a Steelers jersey. Ooh, how about a 70-yard field goal yesterday? If you haven't seen that, it's crazy. How are we doing? Okay, you good? So who's going to write? Someone's going to write? You're writing? Okay, who's going to talk? Who's going to talk? Who's the chattiest one of this whole group? you're gonna be the talker?
I don't want
to. Oh, that's okay. You don't want to?
But I am very.
Okay, but she is very chatty. So just being real, right? You don't want to do it, but you're going to do it anyway? Okay, good. Okay, so here's this, and this is the eraser for the next round. You can pull the marker off of that. Okay, so what we're going to do, and you guys can, you're all going to need to turn and look at the screen, but then once, you don't open that yet. Once we, I'm going to give you like a little challenge. You guys are going to talk and see if you can come up with the answer together, okay? And then you're going to write the answer down, and spelling doesn't matter. Some of these are really hard to spell, I think. And then once you have the answer, I'm going to ask you to tell us what the answer was, okay? All right, you with me? So do you guys understand, I'll face the audience in the camera there. Do you understand what an analogy is? Do you know what an analogy is? Good. Exactly. Okay, an analogy is when two things are related in the same way that two other things are related. Okay? So, for example, how about this? Penn State is to blue and white as the Pittsburgh Steelers are to, what are the colors? Black and gold. So Penn State, blue and white, make sense? That's their colors. And then Steelers are black and gold. And see, you look a little panic in your eye. That's why you're working as a team. We're not putting anybody on the spot here. Okay. All right. So these are going to maybe, that's maybe a little bit more difficult, we're going to work on some analogies. Okay. So let me explain something too. When I say Penn State is to, the two little dots, that's like how you write an analogy. It means is to, right? You all know that, right? You guys know this? Come on. You with me? Okay, good. All right. So is to blue and white, and then there's four dots, and that means just as this is the other. And did you get a picture of all these wonderful people up here too? Okay. All right, hey, smile for the camera too, because we're getting our Instagram shot. Okay, good. All right, so are you with me? You got it all under control. Good. Sure. That's what I love it. Okay. So look at the screen. Here is the first. I'm going to work your way through this. So first one, Phineas. Are you aware of Phineas? Okay. Phineas. Okay. Phineas is to verb. Phineas is to verb. Okay. Do you know who those guys are a little bit? You guys can talk. Just as, there's a little symbol. Just as, Phineas is the verb. Just as Mario is to who? So Phineas and verb, so get that together and discuss. Once you think you have an answer, write it down, and then we'll get an answer. No audience participation. I mean, you can participate with yourselves, but don't give them the answers. But if you don't spell it right, you're wrong. No, I'm just kidding. No, I just, just the answer. I don't need the other one. I need the answer. Mario is to... There's an eraser. It's all right. Just scribble it out. That's all right. That's good enough. Sure. Okay, we're getting there. This is the first one. Don't worry, they get easier, I think. That looks pretty good. Okay, so Phineas is to verb as Mario is to, what do you guys come up with? Luigi. What do you think, Luigi? Yeah, all right. Luigi, why? Phineas and verb are friends, Mario and Luigi. And there's an interesting little thing I noticed as I put this together, that Phineas has red hair and Mario has a red hat and Ferb has green hair and Luigi. And that was just an accident. So, okay, here's your eraser. Go ahead and erase that. Are you with me kind of getting how this works? That is not erasing. Is that a, did I give you a Sharpie? Sorry. It's all good. We have plenty of room to write on that. Okay, next one. Okay. And if not, you can write on her arm. Or you can write on his forehead. Yeah, okay. All right, next one here. We've got, looking at the screen. Okay, who's that? Marshall, thank you. Yeah, I forgot. Marshall, who said, wow, are you judging me? I'm old, man. I was just told this morning, I've got in-laws. Like, I have a son-in-law. That makes me really old. Okay, so what's his name again? Marshall. Marshall is to fire truck. Okay, just as, I don't know what's next. Okay, who's that? Batman is to what? So go ahead and write that down. What are those? Rescue pets? Paw Patrol, that's it. Okay. They're working really well as a team. I just say, parents, I'm impressed. Okay, so Marshall is to a fire truck as Batman is to? The Batmobile. What do you think? Batmobile? All right, let's see. The Batmobile. And it was really wide, so I had to kind of shrink the picture there. And I think anybody, Bill, Batmobile, I think that's circa, I think that's either Batman or Batman Returns, like the Michael Keaton ones. Okay, all right, cool. Go ahead and erase. Good, I'm glad I did not give us 30 of these. There's only 5. Okay, the next one while you're erasing. Okay, there we go. Okay, we good? All right. Okay, we're good. All right, so Mickey Mouse, with me, okay, is to Pluto. Pluto, Mickey Mouse is the Pluto. All right, this is weird if you think about it. Just as Superman is to what? So talk about this one. A little modern reference here if you're up on your current DCU. I'm really impressed with the teamwork here. This is great. Okay, Mickey is to Pluto as Superman is to?
Crypto.
Crypto. How about Crypto? Yeah, all right. So Crypto is the wonder dog. Did you ever think about that? Goofy is what? A dog who's like human with Mickey and Donald, but Pluto is a dog, but he's the pet. All right. What do we have next? Okay, next one we've got. Darth Vader. Okay, this one's a little bit nerdier. This is Darth Vader. It's nerdier, okay? Are you enjoying your seat there? Okay, Darth Vader is to the lights, his lightsaber. Okay, again, now we're getting really nerdy here. If you need audience help, you can ask some nerds in the audience. Okay, Darth Vader is his lightsaber just as Doctor Who is to what? Doctor Who. They're like, who is Doctor Who? Okay. Anybody? Okay. There's some answers down there. Okay. Hey, run down and get an answer. Right there. Go ahead. Oh, you guys go? Oh, yeah, you're going. Okay, wait. Oh, now you're all going? All right, all of you go. Go, just come on. We need to run. You know. Okay, wait. Now we're coming back. Okay, now we're coming back. Okay. All right. And see, you completely forgot about my comment already. All right. Okay. They're like, this is dumb. This is like nerdy. Like, yeah, it is. Okay, so Darth Vader is to his lightsaber as Doctor Who is to Sonic screwdriver. Yes, is that what you think? Yeah, that's true. I have no idea. Sure. Yeah, it's a Sonic screwdriver because, you know, nerds. Okay, I think is this the last one? All right, then I'll turn that TV back on. Okay, let me catch up here. I'm way ahead. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Oh, we're still erasing. This is like some serious erasing now. She's rubbing through the stage. She's now into the floor. Okay. Okay. That is Lilo. Okay. Lilo is to Stitch. Okay. Just as. Okay. Maybe a little difficult. The Mandalorian. Oh, is to. Whoa. All right, Lilo is to Stitch. You know, we're bringing together both generations, animated and then the live action animated one. Thanks, Kirk. Thanks. Some people are on vacation but watching online right now and then commenting on my comment that I made that I shouldn't have made. His analogy was, as I will read to you while they're saying, open up is to say ah, as open mouth is to insert foot. Okay. I love this live interactive TV. Okay, so Lilo is to Stitch just as the Mandalorian is to Baby Yoda. That's a pretty good answer. Does anybody know Baby Yoda's name? Grogu. And yeah, so like Lilo picked up this alien with big ears. And the Mandalorian picked up this alien with big ears as well. So that's it, right? That's all we've got? Okay, so thank you, guys. I'm going to bring you back up in a little bit for something else, but thank you for your help because I want to talk about analogies. Analogies are a tool to help you understand the relationship between things. They're a tool to understand different concepts and different ideas. And this morning, we're going to be looking at a proverb that is an analogy. And unfortunately, or I don't know if unfortunately is the right word, but it is a proverb that is an analogy, but that analogy has been missed many, many times. And the point that we're going to talk about this morning, I'll explain this analogy in a moment, but the point that I want you to get is to wise up and understand debt. Wise up and understand debt. And we're going to be talking about this idea of what is debt because we're going to be using a proverb. And for some of you, this is like, you know, this is probably the first time you've heard this proverb. But some of you have grown up in church or you've listened to, you know, different financial people online. And this is a proverb that has been cropped. We actually did a series called Cropped and a series Cropped 2 is a sequel where we talked about passages that are cropped where they're cut out of the context of the rest of the verse. And this particular passage has been cropped because it's an analogy, but it has been taught as just a statement of fact, a statement of truth. And this is something that a lot of Christians have taught. And so this is a little bit different this week is getting into like breaking down this one passage. It's still a proverb. That's why we're looking at it. But I'm teaching a little bit differently because of that. But it's even something that I taught once upon a time. And the way that the passage it comes from, Proverbs 22, verse 7. And so Proverbs 22:7, and Lily read that for us this morning. She read a different version, which I'll talk about why in a second. But the second part of this verse, it's often used. Again, in church circles. And if you're like, I don't know any of this context, I don't have any of this baggage, great. That's great. But maybe you can learn something through this today. But the proverb is often cropped as the borrower is slave to the lender. The borrower is slave to the lender. And this is the NIV version. And And the way it's been taught, and again, I was one of these people that taught this once upon a time, is that borrowing makes you a slave. And nobody wants to be a slave because slavery is wrong, which it is. Therefore, if you borrow or if you go into debt, you are wrong. Therefore, debt equals sin. And so if you use a credit card, or some would say if you get a loan of any type, or some would say even a mortgage, some would say paying a student loan, depending on where people line up in that, would say this is sin, this is wrong. And I just want to use this morning to help us understand, maybe understand what debt really is and what this passage really is. And again, I'm not pointing fingers because I was one of the ones that taught this. And it's a very nice little thing. Like, that sounds so totally true. Like, nobody wants to be a slave. So nobody should be borrowing because you become a slave. But what I want you to see here as we talk about this is there is a missed analogy. There's an analogy that is in this passage, and it totally changes the way it is understood, the way it is interpreted. And so what we're going to do, I've got 93 slides this morning. I usually average in the mid-20s. So that makes you feel really good. We got plenty of time here. It's just going to get warmer outside, and you're going to be here in the air conditioning. So you are totally fine to be here till 1 a.m. 1 p.m. All of it. No. The reason I have this is because you're going to see in a moment, we're going to be very particular about this particular passage. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be reading it in reverse to understand how this passage works. And let me just, I don't want to embarrass anybody, but how many of you have ever heard at some point the idea that borrowing is wrong or borrowing is sin, or heard that borrow is slave to the lender? Okay, that's cool. And I want to do it in reverse because as we look at it in reverse, it's going to maybe take on a different understanding. So the first thing that we see, and this is very, very basic. I'm going to be very, very basic here. The first thing is we've got in this passage is the lender. The lender is the first part here in this analogy. And so as you look at the verse, and we're going to be in the NLT version, New Living Translation, and the reason why is that the NLT, as you'll see, really explains the analogy. It says this is an analogy. So the first part is the lender in Proverbs 22:7. And again, we're going backwards. So the lender. What is a lender? It is a person that loans money. This was, again, written in Hebrew, and the word comes from two words together. And the interesting thing is that the word literally means a person in authority who is wrapped up with something. Like, and so a lender, and again, our context, or like the lender, we always see like, you know, Ebenezer Scrooge or something like that. But context here, the word just means someone that is wrapped up with something else. Someone else. Someone in authority wrapped up with someone else. And so that's the first part of the passage. Again, very basic. So reading in reverse, we've got the lender. But then the next thing we see is where the analogy begins, or the second part of the analogy concludes. Sure. The lender is servant to. So there's a relationship here. Just as there's a relationship, there's a connection there. And that's just the next part of the verse. So in verse, it's always in verse 7. But it says servant to the lender. So this is the NLT. It uses the word servant. The NIV uses the word slave. And what we need to understand is that neither of those words mean probably what you think they mean. Because we live in America, we live in 2025, and let's just say post-Civil War America, and so we understand, we at least think we have a context, a concept of slavery. And of course, slavery is, you know, people grabbed from Africa and forced to serve white people, forced to serve people in America, and, you know, for no money, you know the story. If you don't, study your history. And so when we think about slavery or servant, like, that is an awful, awful thing, and it should be. But in the biblical times here, that is not what they had in mind. And as a matter of fact, we did, and it's on the slideshow loop, like I said, we did a series called Crop 2. And Crop 2 was about these passages that are in the Bible. And the 1 week that we talked about this was, it was called Chained. And one of the concepts that people have used based on this passage in Exodus, which I'm not going to read, is like, whoa, wait, God is saying that everyone should have slaves. God supports slavery. And in the context, the full context, And again, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you can listen to this online. You can watch it online. The full context was God was like, no, God was actually making things better. He was making things better for people, not encouraging slavery, but saying, how can we help people? But because slavery back then was how you paid off your debt. It was, let's call it as a prior, a much better term that you're all very comfortable with. Employment. Like, that's what the word means. Back then is that if you wanted something, you needed something, you would say, hey, can you help pay for this? Can you front this loan? And I'll work for you. And again, on the point that you can listen to for that week of Crop 2, actually, God was like, you know what? And I just want you to be clear. When you have someone that's working for you to pay back your money, if they don't pay it back in 7 years, you have to release them from the debt. Like, he actually added extra layers to protect people that were working. And so, you know, it'd be kind of nice, probably, if your job, you know, your boss was like, all right, guys, hey, look, you're coming up on 7 years. It's time for you to give you the rest of your retirement. I don't know. You get all of it. And so this idea of servanthood, biblically, in the context of the time, just meant that you were someone that was working for someone else. And what we see in Proverbs, as I said, is a simple statement of fact. That, you know what? When you work for your boss, you have to work. Now, I realize there's some millennials that struggle with that. Because I'm old, I can say that. No, I shouldn't say that. No, but you know what I mean? That idea of, like, what does work mean? Work means to work. And so the writer of Proverbs is saying, look, if you have to borrow from someone, you're going to have to work for them. It is what it is. It's the way it is. And so that's the second. The lender is servant to, and now again, we're going backwards, and so we've got the borrower. And now that's you or me, I'm assuming. Maybe you're the lender. But the borrower, and the interesting thing about this word is that it's the same word for lender. It's the same Hebrew word for lender. And in case you're interested in what that word is, it is lavah. And so it means someone that is wrapped up or entwined with someone else. And so what the writer of Proverbs is saying is that, and we can go to the next verse there, or the next part of it, the borrower is servant to the lender. The person that is wrapped up in the servanthood is wrapped up with the lender. And it's kind of a two-way street, too. You know, I know some of you have rental properties, or if you've done, you know, I don't know if you've Airbnb'd and things like that. But as the one who is the landlord or the property owner, like, there's some baggage with that, too. Like, you got to deal with the people. You got to deal with the ones that are staying there. And maybe they're great tenants, maybe they're not. We stayed in Airbnb with Kendra's family back in, was that May or June? June. And the pictures were not reality. Let me just say that. I don't know what had happened there. I don't know if there was a frat party. But it was an awful situation. You know, we paid we had to pay for it. But somewhere along the line there was a bad, you call them tenants? What do you, client? What is an Airbnb or a bad guest? Yeah, okay, guest. And they mess it up. And so, again, statement of fact. The borrower is servant to the lender. So, going back even more now, the borrower is servant to the lender. Again, we're going in reverse. Then we've got the double colon. Can you see that? That's the so. Just as this, so this is to this. This is to this as this is to this. And so then that's what the NLT includes here in the second part of Proverbs 22:7. So the borrower is servant to the lender. And that so is so important. That so is so important because it is now explaining there is an analogy here. There is a relationship that this writer is putting together between these two different concepts. Just as Phineas is to Verb, so Batman is to Robin. So Mario is to Luigi. So, and I said this to my kids the other day, I was putting this together, so is the Lone Ranger to Tonto. And they're like, who? I have a son-in-law. Okay? I'm that old. So, but there's an analogy here, and that's so important to recognize that as you look at this passage, there's a connection. There's a connection to the first part of it. And so then that leads us to the first part. Again, we're reading in reverse. So then that brings us to the poor. The poor. And again, jumping back to Proverbs 22:7, we've got the poor. So the borrower is servant to the lender. And what is the poor? What are the poor? Well, if you want to know, the Hebrew word for this is someone that is poor. Someone that is needy, someone that is lacking something, someone that needs something. And so the poor here is part of this analogy. And again, just keeping it simple, going, what's the next part? Now we've got the comparison again. The comparison word here is rule. And rule is a word that means to be in charge of, to manage, to have authority over, to sometimes lord or control. And so it says, rule the poor. And again, you're like, this is making no sense. It's like backwards. It is backwards. It'll make sense in a second. Rule the poor. And then we've got the first part of that connection, and that is the rich. The rich. And now, looking at the proverb almost completely, we've got the rich rule the poor, so the borrower is servant to the lender. And I lost my spot there. And the interesting thing here is this other part that the NLT includes. And that is, I think it's on the next slide. There we go. Just as the rich rule the poor, so the borrower is slave to the lender. So again, we're looking at a descriptive statement. I've observed life. And here's what I've noticed. I've noticed that rich people tend to rule over the poor people. They tend to kind of use their authority. They tend to lord it over them. They tend to. Not every rich person is like that. Not every poor person is in a situation like that. And just as that, so I've noticed that the borrowers kind of have to keep working for the lender. They have to serve. They have to do what they need to do to pay off their debt. And as an analogy, it's a statement saying, hey, look, just so you know, when you get into this, this is what you're going to have to deal with. So he's not saying, like, get into debt, it's great, it's fine, it's wonderful. He's saying, if you get into debt, if you owe someone, you're going to have to work it off. You're going to have to deal with it. Now, let's leave that slide there for me, Tommy. But if we take it back to what I was taught growing up, that borrowers is a servant to the lender, that's a sin thing. That if you borrow, then you are going to be a slave to the lender. That it's a statement of this equals that. If that's the case in this analogy, or that this is an analogy, then the writer of Proverbs is also saying, if you're rich, make sure you lord it over the poor. If you're rich, make sure that you rule over those that have less of you, that less than you. And of course, I would think most of us would go, well, God wouldn't say, hey, make sure that you grind people into the ground if you're above them. If you have more than them, make sure to take what they have, and so it's even worse. That is not what this is saying. And again, if we were to take that part, then we'd have to take the second part saying, okay, then that means that borrowing is sin, because anyone that borrows has got to be sinning. And the whole thing is that this is simply a statement. And the conclusion simply is this. This is the conclusion right there. Just as the rich rule the poor, so the borrower is servant to the lender. So that borrowing has its drawbacks. And poverty has its drawbacks. And on the flip side, being a lender has its drawbacks because you've got someone that you have to kind of count on. And being rich has its drawbacks because then there's other things you have to deal with. There's extra layers of stuff. I mean, you know, a monk living in a monastery doesn't have to deal with oven control panels breaking, transmission seals leaking, saltwater filters breaking again. What else broke? Fridge filter suddenly deciding that instead of putting the water in the fridge, it puts the water under the fridge. Like, a monk doesn't have to deal with that. And there, people are like, oh, I'll just become Amish. You still have horses and carriages and wheels. Like, but a monk, I already got the bald going on. But that's kind of what this passage is talking about. Like, just when I observe life, the writer of Proverbs saying, when I see these things, these are what I notice. These are just some observations. And it's a statement of observation. It's descriptive, meaning I'm describing what I see. It's not prescriptive, saying if you're rich, you should rule over the poor. You should lord it over them. Or if you borrow, you're going to be a slave. It's an observation of what is happening. It is a missed analogy. And so, the point is wise up and understand debt. Now, what I want to do here, years ago, in our MC3, earlier MC3 days, we had to make a decision. For some of you, you were here. There was a Sunday where we actually had a wedding. I was teaching about marriage, and then we did a wedding as part of the worship experience. Actually married a couple here in the building because, like, hey, we're talking about marriage. Let's make it real. And I did the premarital counseling with them ahead of time, but it was like a surprise. And they got married right here in the front. And that was really cool. And a lot of people remember that day for that reason. Other people might remember that day because right back there behind the back row in the middle, there's a drain. And some of you that were here that day might remember seeing the toilet paper floating up through that drain as that drain overfilled and just started to fill the room here. Fun times. And so we got in touch with the important people that we need to get in touch with and plumbers, and eventually the borough was here. Like, we had all sorts of people, and they put a vacuum on and they snaked through and put a camera in and eventually determined that we had, and this is a thing, it's like layers of basically like roofing material. They used to make sewer pipes out of that, and they would layer it into layers. And this is like, this is an old building. So this is like in the 1940s or 50s is when this building was originally, or at least the property originally started to work on. And this was out under the blacktop. This was out under the silo. This is out going to the street. And it was basically, it had collapsed. And if we don't want every time we flush the toilet for everything to come back up in the building, we needed to get that repaired. And we got a quote from multiple places. I forget what the actual number was. It was something like $20,000 to fix this. And really weren't many options. And so we had to sit down as elders saying, okay, as Justin already shared about our the fiscal year, the summary, we had to say, okay, how does God want us to manage his money? What is the best thing? What is the right thing for us to do here? And so I remember in that time going, okay, wait a second. We kind of don't have any money. And borrowing is sin because we're going to be slaves, because I remember learning that and teaching that back in the day. And instead I said, why don't I just take a moment, not a moment. I took some time. And I went through the entire Bible. And I found, where does it talk about saving? Where does it talk about spending? And where does it talk about borrowing? And so I kind of put all those together, and I want to, as we kind of wrap up here, I'm going to throw out a whole bunch of verses, and I'm not even necessarily going to give you, I'll give you a little commentary, but I kind of want you to see, what does the Bible say about these issues? We are supposed to be wise managers, everything we have, and that's not one of the verses that I'm looking at, because it didn't talk about one of those three areas particularly. But, and we've talked about this many times. We did a series called Offer. We did a series, actually, in our Churchianity 101 series almost a year ago. We talked about giving. But everything we have is from God, and we are to manage what he's given us. It is our responsibility to manage it for him. So that's the given, if it's his. But what do we do? What does that look like? And so, again, I went through the Bible and said, okay, God, this is your word. This is your instruction to us. We don't want to just do what seems right. We don't want to just throw the Visa card out there and go for it because, that's the way it goes, unless that's the cool thing, unless that's okay. We don't want to avoid something and say, sorry, guys, once we've saved up enough money, we will eventually fix the sewer and re-meet and start meeting again as a church. And so we're like, we want to honor God and say, God, what does your word say? And so I found all these verses. But before we get into me explaining them, I want to bring the Ignition kids back up here for a second. So if you guys could come on up. And help me out, because we have a little, you can just stand right there and let me see here. Okay, watch out for that stool. Hold on. No, I'm going to put this on that stool. There. I'm going to move this over just a little bit so people can see it. All right, there. And I'll put that there, and I'll put that there. Okay, please don't knock those two things over. This is from Nicaragua that I got on a missions trip, and I got it for Kendra, and she gave me permission to use it. Just doing her. And that's a purse that came from Oaxaca. I think Letty gave Kendra that purse, and so I'm not allowed to break that either. You can break the Visa card thing, but don't we prefer not to. Okay, so here's what we're going to do, guys. You're going to vote by moving your body, okay? And this over here is saving. That's a piggy bank. You're going to that's saving, okay? This here is debt. This Visa symbol here is debt or credit card or borrowing. And then this over here is purse. This purse is going to represent spending, okay? And I'm going to give you a verse. And you guys, you're welcome to get audience help if they want to point you one way or another. I'm going to throw a verse on the screen, and then... What are you doing? Just going to hold it. Okay. All right. So, yeah. Okay. You're saving that. Okay. So don't be intimidated by her. Okay. But I'm going to put a verse, and it'll be here, right here as well. And you need to decide, is this, okay, thank you for the distraction. They all love you. Yes. So you need to decide, is this verse about saving, borrowing, or spending? And there's 9 of these. So you're going to have to each vote. If you think it's spending, you're going to stand here. If you think it's borrowing or debt, you're going to stand here. And if you think it's saving, you're going to stand here. Do you kind of get that? And again, you can look at your parents. You can get audience help if you want with that. You with me? It'll be right here on the screen, or it'll be up there on the screen. Okay, here's the first one. These are all out of order because I mixed them up. I don't even know what the order is. The first one is Luke 12:18. Then he said, I know, I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. Then I'll have room enough to store all my wheat and other goods. Do you think that verse is talking about saving, borrowing, or spending? I'll tear down and have enough room to store all of my wheat and other goods. What do you guys think? All right. You keep going down there? Are you going down there? You get on the other side so we can all fit. Okay. All right. So this passage, and we'll talk about it more, is saying, okay, I'm looking into saving. I'm going to store up. I'm going to save all of my wheat and other goods. So, yes, that verse is about saving. The next one. Owe nothing to anyone except for your obligation to love one another. If you love your neighbor, you will fulfill the requirements of God's law. Owing. What does it mean to owe? Does that mean you owe something if you had to borrow something from somebody? Maybe. All right, we're going with the credit card here. Okay, so you think this passage has to do with borrowing? It does, because if you borrow, you owe something to someone if you borrow from them. So good. Okay, next one. Ecclesiastes 5:13. There is another serious problem I have seen under the sun. Hoarding riches harms the saver. The saver. The saver. Hoarding riches harms the saver. Yes, excellent. This passage is about saving. Okay, and we'll come back to all of these. The next one is Luke 14:33. So you cannot become my disciple without giving up everything you own. Is that about saving, spending, or borrowing? Giving up everything you own. Giving up. No peer pressure here, but yeah, giving up. Yeah, so you're spending, essentially, you're giving up, you're spending everything you own. Very good. Okay, the next one is also in Luke. Luke chapter 7 says two people owed money to a certain money lender. One of them owed 500 denarii, the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay back, so he forgave the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more? All right, yes, borrowing. This one's about borrowing and about owing. Okay, next one, Mark chapter 12, verse 44. They gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on. She gave everything, all that she had to live on. All right, that's about spending. And you're like, these don't actually tie into spending. Perhaps there's a reason. Okay, they gave everything out. Okay, next one. Genesis 41 says they should collect all the food of these good years that are coming and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh to be kept in the cities for food. Very good. The passage is about saving. Okay, next one. Mark chapter 10, verse 21 says, Jesus looked at him and loved him. One thing you lack, he said, go, sell everything you have and give to the poor. And then you will have treasure in heaven. Then come follow me. Excellent. He says, sell everything you have. Give it all up. Spend it. And then, I think this might be the last one. Proverbs 21:20 says, wise people store up the best food and olive oil, but foolish people eat everything they have. You're getting it? All right. All right. Excellent. And that's it. Yeah, so all of those, you guys were right. Why don't we give them a hand? And you guys can have a seat. All of you can have a seat. And the bank survived. And I'll step back into it and knock it off accidentally. So, those were most of the verses that, or at least, you know, if you went to the Gospels, you could find parallel versions of those. So there'll be multiple Gospels recording the same stories, because that's what the Gospels are. We'll talk more about that this coming fall. But as I was looking through and saying, okay, if we want to honor God, what does the Bible say about these issues? How do we manage our money? And now I need to get through all those random verses. There we go. So again, we were saying, what does it look like? And these are the ones we found. So the first thing that I discovered in looking at all these verses is, when should we save? When should we save? What does the Bible say about saving? And again, in my upbringing, and I'm not saying saving is wrong, bad. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing to stay out of debt, because I'm not even getting there. But what was interesting to me was the kind of the way I was taught was like, you know, every other verse is like, save up, save up, save up. It actually wasn't. There wasn't as much in the Bible about saving as I had thought. Here are some ways, here are some reasons, some rational, biblical reasons for when we should save money. The first one that I found here, and these are in just my order, trying to make them a little bit easier to understand, is when we would waste. When we would otherwise waste, if there was something that you would waste, if you were managers of what God has given you, if I'm a manager of what God has given me, or let's put it this way, if you were the manager of someone's property, if you were a property manager, and you're like, I don't care about that part of the house, I'll just let it go. I don't care about those things. I'll just, you know, your boss would be like, no, okay, you're fired, because your job is to manage it well, manage it for me. And so if there was a point where we would waste, that's when we should save it. And in Proverbs chapter 21, verse 20, as we already saw, but I'll explain it a little more, it says, wise people store up the best food and olive oil, but foolish people eat up everything they have. And the interesting thing is that this is one of the few, this is the NIRV, Reader's Version, New International Reader's Version. Another one says, wise people save the best food. And this is really the only actual passage that I could find that talked about the word saving. And the interesting thing about this is that this passage isn't about saving. It's about wasting. And the analogy, again, same kind of thing. There's a comparison here. What wise people store up the best food in olive oil. Like if you're if it's good, I'm going to save it. But the focus here was about foolish people. It's not about saving, but about wasting. Because these foolish people, they just eat up everything they have. They don't save anything. They just waste it all. And so there's wisdom. The Proverbs writer is saying, look, there's wisdom in a holding off. Like, you don't need to just waste it. Just because you have it doesn't mean you need to spend it. Just because you've got it doesn't mean you need to get rid of it. He says there's wisdom to saving, because fools, they just, oh, I got money, I'm going to spend it. I got money, I'm going to spend it. I got this thing, I'm going to get rid of it. And the writer of Proverbs is saying, this is what I've noticed, that wise people, they tend to save some things. But it's the foolish people that just eat it up and waste it. So that's one example, one reason when we should save is when we would waste. Another reason that I found biblically is when should we save? We should save when we know a future need. When we know that there's a need coming up, a financial need is what I'm getting at. And of course, we're talking about money here. We're not talking about intangible things such as, I mean, time is tangible, or relationships. But we're talking about, you know, dollars and cents. But when we know there's a future need, it makes sense to save. And of course, you probably know this passage from Genesis chapter 41. I just read a snippet of it earlier, and I'm even reading a snippet of it now. But the story is this. Through a really cool set of circumstances, Joseph, one of the 12 sons of Israel, becomes second in command to Pharaoh. He's second in charge up there, and God had given him a vision, and this vision was that that there are going to be 7 years of plenty, of abundance. It's going to be wonderful. Egypt is going to do really well. You're in charge of Egypt, but then there's going to be 7 years of famine, when there's nothing. All the crops will be decimated. The livestock will be decimated. And so Joseph was put in charge of knowing that this was going to happen, knowing that that expense was coming, was to save. And so this is what Joseph said to Pharaoh. He said, let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. He says they should collect all the food of these good years that are coming and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh to be kept in the cities for food. This food should be held in reserve for the country to be used when? During the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt, so that the country may not be ruined by the famine. And so there's an upcoming expense, and there's wisdom there to say, we're going to save because we know that's coming. If your car is on its last wheel or leg and you know that you're going to, it's okay, save some money for another car. If you know that your taxes are coming due, save some money for your taxes. We have our taxes are escrowed right now, and if you know what that means, that's fine because I don't really either. But it means in a few more years when we pay off our house, we're going to have to actually pay our taxes. And so we have to plan for that. We have to save. And I'm not paying taxes. Saving for things that are coming. If you know there's an expense coming, saving for it makes sense. Because if you go into debt, you're going to have to work maybe extra harder. Extra hard? If you have to pick up a second job when you could have saved the money, you know, there's other things that are involved there. Now you're taking away from family time when, you know, if you had saved for that expense that you knew was coming, then there's wisdom there. So we should save when we would waste, when we know a future need. We should also save when we can control our future. So let me clarify it. Let me say it a different way. You should save money when you know that you can control what happens to you tomorrow. You should save money when you know that what is going to happen as you drive out of this parking lot, you are completely in control of. You're like, what? You can't. You can't control your future. You can't. And we like to try. We like to, you know, do it through all sorts of different ways, controlling, you know, people, relationships, and money is one of those things. And there's interesting, when you see saving in the Bible, aside from that passage that we saw there in Genesis, every other time, it's actually a bad thing. It's actually a negative thing. And in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, this was written by Solomon. We did a series called Life Stinks way back at the beginning of MC3. And Solomon is at the end of his life, wisest human that ever lived besides Jesus. And he gets to the end of his life and basically says, life stinks. It's all meaningless. It's worthless. It's pointless. I've been observing my life and I thought I had everything. I saved up all my money. I thought that was it. I had lots of wives, hundreds of wives. I thought that wives were the answer. And concubines are another thing. We're not going to talk about that. Ignition in the room. He says, you know, I had all these things, all the pleasures, and it was pointless. And he said, here's one of the things he discovered and shared. He says, another serious problem that I've seen under the sun. Hoarding riches harms the saver. Important distinction. Hoarding riches harms the saver. He says, I've noticed that, you know, I had all this money. I saved it all, and it actually hasn't been beneficial. He says, money is put into risky investments that turn sour, and everything's lost. Okay, this is definitely going to be the answer. I'll put all my money here. I'm going to make more, and then it all falls apart. In the end, there's nothing left to pass on to one's children. You know, you're like, oh, I'm putting all my money in the bank, and I don't know, then the money isn't worth as much. Or you're going to save it under your mattress, and then you have a house fire. He's saying, like, there's really no benefit to just hoarding money. He says, here's why. We all come to the end of our lives as naked and empty-handed as the day we were born. He's like, you could have wads and wads of cash. And the best thing they could do is use it to help bury you by packing it around your body. Like because you don't take it with you. He says, we can't take our riches with us. So he's like, saving, if we're just saving to get more and more, what's the point? Because you don't control what's going to happen tomorrow. You're not going to take it with you. But if we use it for someone else, for others, then maybe there's some value there. And very specifically, in Luke chapter 12, it says Jesus, he's telling this parable. And this is really important. Luke 12, 14 to 22. This is very important. He's telling the disciples and his followers a story. He says, a rich man had a fertile farm that produced fine crops. He said to himself, this rich man, what should I do? I don't have room for all of my crops. He's like, things are going really well. We're growing more than we ever expected. We have so many stinking cucumbers that we can't get rid of them. What do I do? He says, I know. I'll tear down my barns and I'll build bigger ones. Then I'll have room enough to store all of my wheat and other goods. I'll just keep adding to the storage. I can save more and more and more. And I'll sit back and say to myself, my friend, you have enough stored away for years to come. Now take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, next slide, you fool, you will die this very night. Then who will get everything you worked for? He says, yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth, but not have a rich relationship with God. And so he's saying, like, you don't have control. You don't know what's going to happen next. And if all you're doing is saving your stuff, what advantage is there to it? He says, don't do this. You're a fool if you save up. But the beautiful part, and you guys, this is often taught separately, but this is the next verse. It says, then, turning to his disciples, this is why I tell you not to worry about everyday life, whether you have enough food to eat or enough clothes to wear. Jesus says, you're a fool to store things up. And he says, and that's why I'm saying don't worry, because I've got you. I'm providing for your need. I'm caring for you. I've got your back. And everything that we have is from God. And so that's why Jesus says, don't worry. And it goes on to that whole passage about look at the fields and how they're beautiful. And look at the birds of the air and they eat and God provides for them. He says, which of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life? He says, don't worry. Because you can't control your future, but God does. And if we're saving up for our own sake of control, it's not going to go. Even if you live the long life. The Apollo 13 astronaut just died the other day. He was 97. That's a good life. That's a long life. Like, you're still not going to take it with you. Okay, so when should we save? When we would waste? When we know a future need? When we can control our future? So the next question is, when should we spend? Looking at these passages, when should we spend? And I'm going to go a little bit faster here. The first one is to follow Jesus. We should spend to follow Jesus. Like, what does that mean? Again, spending means getting rid of it, giving it out. Not saving it, but spending it. And in Luke chapter 14, 33, Jesus said this very directly, and we taught this in a very difficult series called Drastic, where we looked at these hard things that Jesus said to his followers. And he said, you cannot become my disciple without giving up everything you own. Where does the Bible talk about spending, saving, and borrowing? Jesus says, give it up. Sell it all. Get rid of all of it. Give it away. Then you can be my disciple. And specifically over in Mark chapter 10, there's the story of the rich young ruler that comes to Jesus and says, Jesus, what do I need to do to get to heaven? How can I be saved? And Jesus said, well, you need to obey every one of the commandments. And this guy was like, well, as he said, their teacher, he declared, all of these I've kept since I was a boy. Like, wow, pretty impressive. Jesus looked at him and loved him, which is really beautiful. This wasn't a response in anger. This was love. One thing you lack, he said, go sell everything you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come, follow me. At this, the man's face fell. He went away sad because he had great wealth. See, he was willing to do everything, but not that. And Jesus said, look, if you want to follow me, give it away. Give it away, give it away, give it away now. That's what you should do for when we should spend, is to follow Jesus. The second reason, when should we spend to follow Jesus and also to worship Jesus? And there's this passage in Mark chapter 12 where this lady, this woman, it says she's had sinned a lot. She's a woman of ill repute. And she comes to Jesus and she takes this jar of expensive perfume and breaks it on his feet. And she's crying because of what Jesus has done for her. And uses the tears to wipe his feet and her hair to wipe them off and to clean them. And so, that's not this passage. We'll come to that in a second. Sorry, I got ahead of myself. So it says Jesus sat down opposite the place. It's a different story. Hold that thought. Bring it back in a second. Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. So they're at the place where people were giving. This is their worship. Just as we pass our buckets, and it's worship. These people were giving at the temple. Many rich people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put in two very small copper coins worth only a few cents. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "Truly I tell you, this widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on." And so this woman says, "I want to worship Jesus with everything." And that's when we should be spending. We should be giving it away, saying, "Jesus, I want to worship you. If it costs me everything, then I'm going to do it." So that's when we should spend, to follow Jesus, to worship Jesus. And then when should we owe? And now we'll get to this story. When should we owe? One is in gratitude. We should owe a debt of gratitude to Jesus for all that he has done to us. So Jesus was at this spot, and this woman came. She had done a lot of the awful things, and she was crying at Jesus' feet because of what he had done for her, how much he had forgiven her. And it's interesting, Jesus stops in this moment and pulls aside Peter and says to Peter, "Hey, two people owed money to a certain money lender. One owed him 500 denarii and the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he forgave the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more?" And Simon responded, "Oh, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt forgiven." "You have judged correctly," Jesus said. And so obviously, the bigger debt, the more forgiven, the more you owe. Like, "Thank you so much, you've given me more." And then a little bit later, when all this is happening, Jesus says, "Therefore I tell you, this woman who's anointing his feet, who's crying over his feet, her many sins has been forgiven, as her great love has shown. But for whoever has been forgiven little, loves little." And so what do we owe? We owe everything. We owe everything to Jesus. That's when we should owe. "Jesus, I owe you everything. Because he has given his life for us. He has given us hope." That is when owing should happen. And the second reason, owe, when should we owe? And again, looking at all these passages, is it in love to others. And Paul wrote this to the church in Rome. He says to these church people there, he says, "Owe nothing to anyone." So he's kind of like, hey, you don't want to get caught up in debt. It's not a great thing. He says, but owe this. Owe nothing to anyone except for your obligation to love one another. He's like, that's what you owe to everyone else. Because what do they do for me? It doesn't matter. You owe them your love because you're a follower of Jesus. So those are all the different passages that I looked at. And you can do your own research, and I'd encourage you to. What does it look like to understand debt? When should we save? When should we spend? And when should we owe? Those are some of the passages that the Bible puts forth. And so this idea of debt, is debt bad? It's not great. And, you know, if you get into serious debt, you're going to be in some serious trouble. But if you get to the point where you're saving everything and hoarding it, you're also going to be in serious trouble. But I can tell you the one thing that you never see in the Bible, you never see anyone being judged for giving it away. Ever. And from our perspective in our world today, that seems foolish. But nowhere do you see God, Jesus, anything condemning someone for giving everything away. So wise up, understand debt. That's a passage. It was cropped. Now you understand it a little bit more. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your word. Thank you that your word is life to us, that all 66 of these books are inspired by you and give us the instruction and what we need to know how to live. And I pray when it comes to this idea of debt and saving and spending, that it wouldn't be about what our culture says. It wouldn't even be about maybe what some church people say. It wouldn't be about what I say. God, I pray that we would look at what your word says when it comes to how we handle our money, how we handle your money, and help us to be wise managers of it. Thank you so much for giving us your word. Thank you for giving us everything that we have, and that we are blessed to have what we do. And we give you the gratitude that we owe you. And thank you for that. And we thank you for Jesus and the eternity that he has offered us through his death on the cross. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.